This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Laura Dern, has starred in such films as Blue Velvet, Rambling Rose, Citizen Ruth, and Jurassic Park. Dern wanted to be an actress even when she was a child. She knew what she was getting herself into from observing her parents, Bruce Dern and Diane Ladd. Now Laura Dern is starring in the movie We Don't Live Here Anymore, which is based on two short stories by the late Andre Debuse. We Don't Live Here Anymore is about marriage and infidelity. It focuses on two couples whose marriages seem to be falling apart. Dern plays a wife and mother whose husband, played by Mark Ruffalo, teaches at a small college. She sees he's losing interest in her and becoming impatient with her, but she doesn't know that he's having an affair with her best friend, whose husband also teaches at the college. Film critic David Denby wrote in The New Yorker, "The movie is so beautifully made and so strongly emotional that the potentially dreary material is actually thrilling." In this scene, Dern and Ruffalo are having a fight in the kitchen.
We've been married so long that you're bored? Is that it?
Terry.
No, is that what it is? Because you can leave any time.
Terry.
I mean, maybe you and I should sit down and talk about how long
Terry.
This thing is going to last between you and me.
I am not going
fine,
anywhere.
Jack.
I have
the
never
kids will
wanted
be fine,
to go anywhere.
You know, if you're
I am
suffering,
not suffering.
If this is such
I am
a
not...
disappointment.
What are you really worried about, Terry?
Other husbands touch their wives.
Do you see Hank fondling Edith every second?
Hank doesn't love her. He told me when you were out.
He said that to you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Why? Why did he tell you that?
I don't know. He just said it.
What were you guys doing? He just blurted that out? It seems odd.
We were talking. How else do people tell each other things?
Well, usually when people say things like that, they're doing other things.
That's a scene from the new movie We Don't Live Here Anymore. Laura Dern, welcome to Fresh Air. I know a lot of actors often draw on their own experiences and feelings for a role. Is it hard when you're doing a role like this to have to immerse yourself in all the bad breakups of your life?
Right. It's interesting. I mean, often, for whatever reason, hopefully not just being overdramatic in my life, I've picked characters who are in some form of anguish, even when it's, a comedy. But in this story, it was the first time in my life as an actor, and I started acting professionally when I was 11, that I had taken purposefully a concentrated amount of time off. I had a child and took about a year and a half off to be with him and my partner, and it was an incredible period of time. And when I decided to go back to work and had the good fortune of getting this part, I had such a voracious appetite to get back to my work that it was the first time that I had experienced as much anguish as my character was in. I was just thrilled to have this kind of dialogue and this kind of character to play and to be back doing what I loved, that I think I was just had a, you know, endless smile on my face when I wasn't in front of the camera.
Laura, your parents are both actors, Bruce Dern and Diane Ladd. They separated when you were two. Was that separation hard on you?
It's interesting. It's an interesting question because I know we can all only speak from our own experience, and I want to answer this with holding that I know divorce for so many is incredibly painful. I think I may have been one of the lucky ones. My parents are very full, big, remarkable personalities and artists, and I think it may have been best for everyone that they weren't together. So sometimes, I can find myself being a proponent for divorce. I think it was easier communication than perhaps trying to stay in a marriage that for them clearly wasn't working anymore, and they had done a decade together. And at the point that I was two, they just couldn't communicate anymore. It was just too hard for everybody.
Do you think that their differences as people and any of the differences that they had in the relationship reflected in differences in their approach to acting?
Definitely their approaches to the business. My mother is a very passionate, very strong-willed individual. In all of her life, as an actor, she's a social and political activist her whole life. She's extremely impassioned about all things. my father comes with much more irreverence. And if you could put those two people together, certainly it's an aspiration of mine to try to find balance between the two. I think it's a great combination if we can acquire it. And so I see the obvious difference in their careers. My dad can sort of laugh off the difficulties of the film business, when my mother may feel something and take it to heart much more harshly, even at times.
You knew you wanted to act by the time you were about 9. You had your first role in a movie, I think, when you were 11. How did you know that you wanted to act, and how did your mother try to discourage you from doing it?
Well, how I knew I wanted to act, as I mentioned before, spending time on film sets with my parents around filmmakers like Scorsese and Hitchcock, where you saw an incredible collaboration between filmmaker and everyone else on the movie. I mean, that was the energy of it. But that the job of acting was really about trying to acquire a skill at being as pure and honest as possible seemed just like a fantastic job, and seemed inventive and so fun and exciting. In terms of how my mother discouraged it, you know, it's funny when you think you're giving your child a sacrifice. If they really love something, it's never experienced as that for the kid. You know, I wanted to be an actress, so my mother thought she was being very hard by saying, you have to study for the next 3 years, no outside hobbies of school, no other activities, no horseback riding anymore. It's got to just be acting class, studying, taking your weekends. You don't go to this party or that because you've got class. Which was where I wanted to be. That was more fun to me. So I was very committed to it. And at the end of 3 years, much to her extreme frustration, I continued the pursuit. And she sort of said, hey, do whatever you want, but we're not going to help you. And so then I, you know, tried to find an agent and audition for some agents to have them send me out on auditions and get friends of my mom's that drove to drive me to an audition and things like that.
So you got a part in a movie that she was in, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, which was directed by Martin Scorsese. You were 11, I think? Is that right?
Actually, that movie, I was 7, and
oh.
The truth is people say I acted in it, but I mean, I was sitting at a counter having an ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still getting to be part of the experience of filmmaking, I'm sure just encouraged the desire, as my mom and Scorsese laugh about. The story supposedly went that he had me sitting at the counter eating a banana-flavored ice cream cone through this big scene, dramatic sort of climax of the movie between Ellen Burstyn and Kris Kristofferson, and I was right behind them, so I had to be in every take, and they had to do 26 takes. So I had to eat 26 ice creams. And in front, unfortunately, because maybe something would have been different, right in front of me, Scorsese said to my mom, oh my gosh, he ate 26 ice creams. This girl's going to be an actress. And so I used that with my mother for years after. Well, Scorsese said, you know, I was going to be an actress. But in fact, my first professional job was when I was 11, and it was a film called Foxes that Adrian Lyne directed.
It's funny.
Jodie Foster.
I figure Scorsese could have said, she had 26 ice cream cones, she's going to be an actress, or she's going to be real sick.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think he was so impressed that I didn't throw up, frankly, that he considered me a true professional. So that might have inspired the comment.
You went to Catholic school. Was there a list of movies that you were not supposed to see?
Well, I was not the favorite student. Let's put it that way. My Catholic school life didn't have a terribly long life because I found myself in the Monsignor's office. I'd seen a movie called The Reincarnation of Audrey Rose, and I'd come back to explain to the rest of the class how, you know, we come again and again, and I was showing them meditation and told that that was a sin and we weren't allowed to believe in reincarnation. Then I went to an ERA rally. And at like 10 was talking to them about pro-choice, and that was the end of my Catholic school career.
You're very tall. How did that affect you as a girl in school? How did it affect, you know, like the friends you had or the boyfriends, and how did it affect you as a very young actress?
Well, they say it can be genetic, but I'm sure I gave myself scoliosis, which I did get riddled with for a time because I just put myself into a pretzel to try to be 5'2", which was the size of all the boys. So I'd stick one hip out and kind of move my shoulders down and just stand as though I were about 7 inches shorter than I was, because I was, I think, 5'9". I'm 5'10 and a half, but when I was 12, I reached 5'9".
Wow.
And it wasn't easy. I was definitely always the tallest one.
Do you still have the scoliosis?
Actually, I've somewhat outgrown it, too, so that's really great news. My mother is, luckily, as I mentioned, she's passionate about everything, is also passionate about alternative medicine. So I saw osteopaths and chiropractors a great deal in my childhood, and it seemed to help a lot. And so I didn't have to have a surgery, and I was doing yoga as a kid and a lot of things that really helped me a great deal.
The first film that I really noticed you in, and I think I speak for a lot of people when I say this, was Blue Velvet. And I'm wondering how you got the part in it and how old you were when you got it.
Well, it was an amazing thing. I was 18. I had, at 16, 17, I was getting out of high school and really focusing on my career as truly the thing I wanted to do with my life as an adult. And I had been cast in Mask for Peter Bogdanovich, and in the same year, an independent film called Smooth Talk, which was based on a Joyce Carol Oates short story, actually. And it was a really interesting film and a really interesting role for someone my age. And so I think the support and critical support of those movies, particularly Smooth Talk, may have been the thing that luckily made David Lynch aware of me and asked to meet me. And one of the most interesting things about David Lynch is whether you've done very little work or a great deal of work, he's really not an auditioner, if that's a word. He really meets actors and has a feeling if they're right or not. So the process was odd in that I went and met with him and spoke to him for about an hour about the movie, and then he ended up asking me to play the part. Just felt I was what he wanted for that role. But what's really interesting about it, Terry, is I always talk about how, you know, in the trajectory of our careers, how things find you, and good fortune is certainly a part of, it comes into play even as much as we want it to be about skill and innate gifts and all of that. And so, you know, I screen test at the same time as I met David Lynch, I screen test for a John Hughes movie and a very popular TV series, but I didn't get those. I got the David Lynch movie. And people are always saying, you know, my God, you know, how you chose this career working with people like David Lynch. Well, when you're 18, it sort of chooses you, you know?
Why don't we hear a scene from Blue Velvet? And this is a scene between you and Kyle MacLachlan. And this is a scene shortly after he found the severed ear in the field. And a detective, who's actually your father, is following the case. Kyle MacLachlan has just finished talking to your father, the detective, and as Kyle MacLachlan leaves the house, he meets you, and you have some information on the case.
So what do you know about the ear?
Didn't my father tell you not to talk about it?
Yeah, but you brought it up. You know anything?
I don't know much but bits and pieces. I hear things.
Yeah?
My room is right above my father's office, so...
Above your father's office?
So I heard a few things about the ear.
Uh-huh. And?
Well, there are a couple of cases I get mixed up on.
Mm-hmm.
But one name that keeps coming up is this woman, Singer. She lives in an apartment building that is real close to your house. It's also close to the field where you found the ear.
It's a strange world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know where this woman's apartment building is?
Yeah, it's really close by. That's what's so creepy. They had her under surveillance for a couple months, except I don't know what they found out, because it's not my dad's case. So...
I guess you gotta get back home pretty soon, huh?
Not really. Why?
Well,
you want to see the building?
Yeah.
Come on, I'll show you.
That's Laura Dern and Kyle MacLachlan in a scene from Blue Velvet, directed by David Lynch in 1986. And Laura Dern is now starring in the new movie We Don't Live Here Anymore. Let's move up to 1991, when you starred in Rambling Rose with your mother, Diane Ladd. What was it like acting with your mother? Did she seem like your mother, or did she seem transformed into a different character?
You know, it's interesting. I feel like my mom and I were given something that all mothers and daughters should be given, which is the opportunity to play out the complete extreme opposites of a mother-daughter relationship. We did Wild at Heart with David Lynch together, where she not only was a horror and truly evil and just terrifying, but there's even a scene where I look out my car window and see her riding a broom as the Wicked Witch of the East. So that saved years of therapy. And then cut to Rambling Rose. She's playing a character called Mother, in which she's the only one that understands me and is so embracing of my greatest qualities and understanding of my challenges. So it was just a beautiful way to play out the opposites in our relationship. And I think really did help us grow even closer together. On the professional side of things, it's just fascinating to sort of be a professional at work next to a parent. It's so odd. You know, you want to be a real pro and you're incredibly relaxed and anxious. It's like a lot of things.
Did you find yourself slipping into real mother-daughter stuff as you were playing these roles?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was inevitable. And at times, I know there's one scene in Wild at Heart, actually, there's a moment towards the end of the movie where I'm going through a great deal of grief. I believe it's when Sailor, Nicolas Cage, my boyfriend in the film, gets sent to prison, and she finds me in the courthouse. And it's just a moment where she comes and holds me as I'm crying on this bench. And, you know, as she pulled away from the hug, she looked in my eyes and I just started weeping. And I remember David after sort of saying, "Oh God, that was so powerful. What were you working on, or what was going on?" I'm like, I just looked in my mom's eyes and it was my mom. You know, you don't need to act. It just, she knows my story and I know hers. And it's just something so deeply intimate. It's an amazing experience as an actor.
You're a mother now. You have
Your
child's, what, a year and a half or something?
No, he's actually 2 and a half, almost 3.
Now, when your son is about 9, if he says what you said when you were about 9 to your mother, "Mom,
oh God,
I really want
to
act,"
to me, Terry?
what would you say?
Well, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what's innate and what is acquired, because as someone just about to turn 3, he's so drawn to music and he loves it and instruments.
That's
and,
your partner's thing.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what develops in him, because that's something that's just that seems to be something he was born with. But, you know, of course, I'll give you the line that, you know, we just want our children to be happy, which is true. He's a boy. With a girl, I probably would be as defensive as my mother was about the business, because, you know, now that we turn around and there are like women in their early 30s getting Botox and face work, it's something's terribly wrong. But you know what my little, I'll leave you with my little secret, what my secret is, Terry, as an actress in my mid-30s, while I watch all these people around me at a very young age redoing their face, and none of us are being educated in sort of being comfortable with self. That doesn't seem to be part of the work of becoming a grown-up. If I stick with that and do nothing, I'm going to corner the market on all the 60-year-old parts, because nobody's going to look 60 when I get there. I'll be talking to you looking, you know, like an aged version of myself in 30 years and hopefully get some really interesting characters to play.
It's really been great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Oh, so great to talk to you. Thank you.
Laura Dern is starring in the new movie We Don't Live Here Anymore.